The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Is it having the NBA back finally? Yes, sir. Look who it is. Max Kellerman and Richard Jefferson. Richard, where the heck have you been? It's good to see you here to talk some NBA. Stephen A's off today. It'll be Max against a cast of characters. Good luck, Max. You got this. Guys, let's dive right into it here. Don't sleep on Portland. That's all I got to say. So the Trailblazers have now won three straight against the Houston Rockets thanks to some vintage Carmelo Anthony moments. Knocked off Houston again last night. A season-high 64 rebounds. The race is real, fellas, for that eighth and final spot. The Blazers are 1.5 games back of Memphis for the eighth seed. Portland has one extra game played. There's a good shot the Lakers will face the Blazers in the first round of the playoffs. I don't know if that's good for LA. But, Max, I need to come to you. And let's put Max on camera here. You know, Max, you never apologized to Tom Brady. I find that very, very disrespectful on your part. But do you owe somebody else an apology after last night?
Who would that be?
Carmelo Anthony. Are you familiar? He played in your city for a while.
Okay. Absolutely not. I do not owe Carmelo Anthony an apology, and people need to stop with this foolishness. I tell the truth as I see it. Carmelo Anthony thought he was still a superstar when he was no longer. His ego took hits. And by the way, every step of the way I mentioned, even in the clip that Kendrick Perkins retweeted yesterday when he said, I owed him an apology, Kellerman owes him an apology. I always thought of Carmelo as a clutch player. I know he's a future Hall of Famer. He's one of the great scorers of all time, right? I get that. But he was no longer a superstar. And then when his ego took that hit, I also gave him credit for trying to fit in, trying to do the right thing. In Houston, in Oklahoma City, it's not that the will wasn't there and his heart wasn't in the right place. It's that he wasn't that good anymore. And that not as good as he used to be. And that was coupled with the fact that the league was changing from right under his feet. Right. So did he? His overall offensive game was always devastating. But when that talent isn't pitched as high because of father time anymore, what specific skill do you do to help a team? Right. Is he an amazing catch and shoot 3-point shooter? No. Not amazing. He can do it, but he's not like, oh my God, Carmelo Anthony is amazing at that. Was he a defender? Was he a versatile defender, even a defender at all? No, not as much. If you needed a bucket in ISO, could he get you a bucket? Yes, he could. And so I mentioned he's like a 15-minute player off of someone's bench. Now, those who were arguing that he was still better than that, he is proving them right and me wrong. So that is true. He's proving what I said about him based on what I saw wrong. And now that he's giving new evidence, I will adjust my opinion. Carmelo Anthony is still a valuable contributor to a good NBA team. He is not just a guy who could be in a rotation. He can start, maybe even on a championship team. Not a great start. He's not a star anymore. But the fact that at his age, he could still be a starter on a contending team says a lot about his greatness. And so what I will say is Carmelo proved my prediction about him wrong. I certainly don't owe him an apology because when he was playing at one level, I said it and that was the truth. And now he's playing at a different level. I'll say that again and that's the truth.
Max, what are you talking about? Everyone owes him an apology. The entire NBA owes him an apology. Let me say this. He would not be in Portland right now if they weren't decimated by injuries early on. So Portland got a gift because they took a risk and they believed the individual when he said that, hey, look, I'm at a point now where I understand changing my game. I understand that, but what you're doing right now is the same thing that got Carmelo in trouble. You're allowing your ego to dictate everything. Don't let your ego just say, you know what? I'll allow for not an apology, just say something. Say, you don't have to say, I'm sorry, Carmelo, I'm sorry, I'm sorry. No, but what you do need to say is, look, Carmelo continued to evolve. No different than the NBA evolved. He continued to evolve. And every portion of evolution isn't always smooth. Transitioning from a starter and a superstar into a role player can be difficult. But if you give somebody an opportunity and they tell you that they're willing to do it, you have to believe them. And because the Portland Trailblazers believed them, mainly because they needed to believe him, it put them in a position to make the postseason. They would not be in the postseason right now if they did not sign Carmelo. And for that reason, everyone owes him an apology. Do you know how many teams right now, the Lakers included, would love for that type of production to be on their team? If the Lakers would have signed him, no disrespect to Dion Waiters or my brother J.R. Smith, they would be in a much better position to go and win a championship against the Clippers or the Milwaukee Bucks. So a lot of teams missed out on Carmelo because they were being stubborn and they didn't want to take him on his word.
Now, look. But I disagree with that. Like, I agree with the fact that he evolved, and Carmelo Anthony deserves enormous credit. And he has proved the doubters, and I was certainly one of them. It's not just that I doubted. I was pretty certain he was washed. Wrong. He proved me wrong. But an apology is something else.
There's the apology.
That's if we were seeing one thing and saying another about him. Richard, you're saying the adjustment period isn't always smooth. I agree with that. This happens in every sport. When a star has to adjust to being a different kind of player, a pitcher in baseball loses his fastball, he has to become a finesse pitcher, there's usually a little dip before he gets to kind of like a second prime or the next level of his career, right? So I get that, but there was a dip. Like, we saw him not be effective anymore to the point that two different contending Western Conference teams both said, and they said the same thing, look, his intentions are good, he's working hard, he's trying to fit in, there's just no room for him here, right? Because he wasn't good enough. Now he's adjusted his game and given the right situation, he showed, no, in fact, he is good enough. But this is new now. He wasn't good enough, and now he is. So he has made the adjustments, and he's proven the doubters like me wrong. That's different than saying we owe him an apology. No. Like we were going off of something we didn't really see.
No. And Mac, this is the thing. You say that he wasn't good enough, and I know for a fact that is not true. Do you want to know how it's true? Because I had an NBA GM specifically tell me, he was like, look, we like Carmelo, but ultimately, if you look at the end of your bench, you don't want a Hall of Famer in the ninth spot and this pressure to play him. So even if Carmelo was doing everything right, coming off the bench, saying all the right things, working hard, coaches and teams didn't want that pressure. That is not Carmelo's fault. That's why he was out the league.
Yeah.
And this individual GM said, look, if it's not going to work in Oklahoma City and it's not going to work in Houston, why is it going to work here? So people were shooting him down because they didn't want the pressure of having a great player in their 8th-9th spot, even though he got to a point where he was willing to do it. Well,
based on his play in Oklahoma City and in Houston, people looked at him and thought, that's the 9th guy on the bench. That's where he was, and they didn't want it. So that kept it. I never thought Carmelo doesn't deserve a roster spot in the NBA.
You said Carmelo.
It was never like he doesn't deserve Carmelo that. I just didn't want to see him either, getting 12, 15 minutes a game. But that's how he was playing. He's playing better than that now. You started out by saying he made an adjustment. And so now he's playing better than he was, right?
Yes. Well, you said he was washed.
That's where the apology comes in.
He was not washed.
Right. Okay. If I ever said he's washed, for that I apologize because he's not washed. And that's kind of
There we go.
But it was honest. But it was honest based on what I was seeing. And if a Hall of Famer... it's like when I said Tom Brady will be a bum in short order. I never liked that choice of words. And when you're saying washed, you're being a little mean, obviously. But you're also being real. When you see a Hall of Famer not able to hold it down as a 6th or 7th man, it's fair to say that guy's washed. Now, maybe not washed because that means he can't play at all anymore. But Damian Lillard saying the sad thing is that he's a Hall of Famer and people are surprised. But Dame, Hall of Famers get old and can't do it anymore either. Larry Bird can't play in the NBA today. Dr. J can't because they're old. They can't do it anymore.
All right, Max Kell. I got two things to say to you. I got two things to say right now. One, the Lakers shouldn't want to play the Blazers in the first round. That's the first thing. Second of all, Max, wise words. Max, don't let your ego dictate everything. That from Richard Jefferson. You just remember that, my friend. I'm teasing you. It's just a joke. Hey, I'm Molly Karam, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code FIRSTTAKE and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to gamble responsibly. See BetMGM.com for terms. This U.S. promotional offer not available in D.C., Mississippi, North Carolina, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 for New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. For Massachusetts, 1-800-327-5050. For Iowa, 1-800-BETS-OFF. For Puerto Rico, 1-800-981-0023. For West Virginia, visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net. First bet offer for new customers only, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.
The UConn football season is over before it could get started, with a schedule that was already in shambles after several canceled games and the ongoing concerns related to coronavirus being transferred through close contact. UConn officially canceled its football season today. It was set to be the first season for the Huskies as an independent program. On that note, we bring in our guy, the mouth of the South, Paul Feinbaum. Paul, thank you so much for being with us. And a lot to get into here. Obviously, this one's personal for me, UConn alum, and I'm a season ticket holder, men's and women's basketball and football. And clearly, there's no season. So I want you to touch on that, and then I want to get into some of the other safety protocols going around with the other conferences. What was your reaction when you heard that?
It's interesting, Molly, you hear about every other conference playing because of financial reasons. I think UConn canceled because of financial reasons. They are in debt right now. They're in the transfer of leagues, as you well know. Their schedule had been decimated, and I think they made the right call, just saying it's not worth it. We're going to lose more money. We don't really want to invest in this season because it's going to be a lost cause anyway. What the bigger story in college football is, will middle-of-the-pack schools follow them? I think they will. And then you have a couple of other things happening. You have the Big Ten announcing their schedule today on Labor Day weekend. So think about this for a second. The Big 12 is going to start on August 28th. The next week, the Big Ten will start, as will the ACC. And then you go to the end of the month, the September 26th, when the Pac-12 and the SEC. So anyone who doesn't believe that college football is a royal mess, think about the fact that the college football season will open over a five-week stretch. And the people at the end, I believe, are the smartest. Their fans may not be happy about this, but Molly, I think at the back end conferences want to see what happens at the front end, meaning if those week zero games don't go well, if when the Big Ten starts, you start seeing outbreaks and you have to shut programs down temporarily, you may see the whole thing collapse. And there's one more thing here. Safety. There was a story coming out of Colorado yesterday. A couple of players told a newspaper out there that the Colorado State coaches were discouraging them from being honest about testing positive for COVID. There were reports that their contact tracing was being finagled, that they were not social distancing. Same thing came out of the player from Virginia Tech, which I discussed with you guys on Monday, that he complained that it wasn't safe. And for all the hot air, the college administrators want to say that safety is the first issue. There are some cracks out there, and I don't think this is getting enough attention.
That's egregious and shameful, Max.
Of course, and probably illegal. It sounds like some people could be prosecuted for that if certain things were proven true, or should be at least. Paul, you know, you love college football, obviously, right? A big chunk of your life is dedicated to following it and explaining it to people and opining about it. And it's not just for the love of football. Like, if it was just about football, then the NFL, right? That's the highest league. So it's not just about the quality of play. It's about the fact that it is amateur, supposedly. There's the veneer of amateurism, at least. The schools, the rivalries, that time in people's lives, the whole thing. What this is really shining a light on, it seems to me, is the fact that that is all a sham, that the decisions are made strictly about business, that whenever they talk about their concern for the student athletes, it's utter hypocrisy, just nonsense. But I don't know if it's ever been laid as bare as it is right now during this pandemic under these conditions. What do you think the lasting effect of this on the college game could be?
Well, I think that's the ultimate question. And I think ultimately, if you're a college president, and Max, we've all sat through graduation and commencement and listened to college presidents talk about the integrity of the academic institution. If one of these presidents sign off on the current plan and the worst thing happens, something catastrophic, something cataclysmic occurs, and I think it's pretty easy to figure out what that is, then what do they say then? I'm not even talking about the liability. I don't understand all the machinations of where that goes, but that is another river to cross here. But you're talking about possibly a stain on this sport that can never be changed, irreparably damaged. And I think that's a major concern. Right now, I still think the plans are where everyone's swimming across the river and trying to get to the other side, meaning the opening weekend. But all the conversation about we have it under control, we have the protocols, I think is nonsensical. We're still seeing outbreaks across the board. Rutgers had a severe outbreak this week. You've read about other ones. And the thing that concerns me the most is the lack of transparency. Some schools are admitting, yes, we've had issues. We put out 417 tests and we've had four positives, just like Major League Baseball, just like the NFL, just like the NBA. But in college football, it's up to the individual schools. And I've heard horror stories at some schools where the coaches simply don't care. Football coaches are like a lot of other people in athletics, but they're a little bit more stringent. They're a little bit more militaristic. And I'm concerned that a lot of coaches are looking the other way. Players are intimidated by these coaches. You're seeing some opt-out, but not to the degree that we've seen in the NFL. And ultimately, some idiotic football coach is going to bring the whole system down if we're not careful.
No question. Paul, one other thing I wanted to get your thoughts on here quickly. I'd also heard you were on Get Up earlier, and we saw that the Big Ten and Michigan, they're charging ahead. What can you tell us about that and their upcoming schedule?
Well, the most interesting part of that is that Michigan and Ohio State, which is always the weekend of Thanksgiving, it's the end of the regular season. Mm-hmm. That game has been moved to the end of October, and I'm not joking about it, but it's probably good news for Jim Harbaugh. Now he doesn't end the season with a loss to Ohio State. He gets it out of the way early before Halloween. But it's aggressive by the Big Ten. But what conferences are doing right now, Molly and Max, they're feeding red meat to the fans who call in my program and that ultimately will listen to every other program. I don't know if they're being sincere, but they're just trying to do whatever they're supposed to do right now. But we have still not really hit the bottom line here of whether this season will go on. It looks like it's going to start. And by the way, we're only 3 weeks away from the so-called week zero. I think we'll get there. But once we start playing football games, I think it's anyone's guess whether we'll get to the end of September, the end of October, or certainly to the end of the season.
Paul, the off-the-field stuff, of course, is swallowing up any other, you know, story. There's not a lot of oxygen left for stories. I think partly because there's skepticism. I'm very skeptical that they'll ever finish the season. May not even start it, in fact. But what story, you know, pandemic aside, do you think is kind of most worthy of being out there? Something that could pertain to on the field, a storyline with a coach, a player, a team, that you would otherwise be talking about right now were it not for the pandemic?
Yeah, I think it comes down to two players in college football. The face of college football this season are two quarterbacks, Justin Fields at Ohio State. Remember, he transferred from Georgia. And Trevor Lawrence, who went into last season as the Heisman favorite at Clemson. You know, so you have those two stories, and then there's always Alabama. What's going to happen there? I mean, Nick Saban turned 69 here in a couple of weeks, and you have to wonder. He's having a great recruiting class. He's coming off of a terrible season, Max. He lost two games last year and destroyed Michigan in a bowl game. So those are the bigger issues. I think as we get closer, I'm following this is back to COVID, the opt-outs. Are we going to see more prominent players opt out as we get closer to the first game? I think we will. They're watching the NFL. And then one more thing that we talked about Monday, and I know you weren't here, that continues to be underneath the surface, and that's what's happening out in the Pac-12. The players in the Pac-12 want to negotiate with the conference commissioner. Will this spread across the country as this chaos reigns? And I suspect that it will.
I just want to wrap this up, Paul. Thank you so much. This whole segment's been enlightening. But the story that you said, and it's not getting enough attention, that Colorado State football coaches are being accused of telling players and staffs not to reveal their COVID-19 symptoms. I just want to remind everyone, we're talking about people's lives at stake, and the after effects of this virus can be absolutely devastating.
Holly,
thank you so much for sharing
with
us.
I
just had to make mention of it again. It's unbelievable. Go ahead, Max.
It's not even about the players, really, who may have the disease. It's about the fact that they then spread it if they're not reporting
of
that
course.
They have it. Then they become vectors
of
for
course.
The disease. And the whole point of taking the precautions that people are taking is the societal benefit of protecting the elderly and those with underlying conditions, those most vulnerable among us, for whom the disease can be fatal. I mean, it can be fatal even for the not the most vulnerable, but especially for the most vulnerable among us.
Hey, Molly Karam here, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part, each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code TAKE. That's code TAKE. Visit vividseats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live. Hey, Molly Karam here, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. We all know breakfast is part of your day, but sometimes when you're traveling for business, you end up staying at a hotel that doesn't offer any, and you know what happens. You grab a cup of coffee, you skip the meal entirely. We've all been there. But if you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you can enjoy their free Bright Side breakfast featuring delicious baked goods, fruit, eggs, yogurt, even waffles. And really, who doesn't want to start their day with a fresh hot waffle? Come on. Tonight, La Quinta, tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com. The Mavs in action last night. Luka putting in work. Richard Jefferson back here with us. Max, I want to start with you on this one. I know how much you love Porzingis as well and how upset you were when the Knicks got rid of him. Tell me this. Do Luka and Porzingis belong in the top two convo in terms of duos?
In the conversation, absolutely. Now, I would take Kawhi and Paul George number one. I think LeBron and AD also have a very good case. But in the conversation, it's like, tell me about the MVP conversation. I think it's Giannis. Some people think it's LeBron. AD ain't going to win it. But should he be in the conversation? Yeah. Porzingis and Luka should be in the best duo conversation. And I think they will win a championship together. I don't think it will be this year. But I think they will do it together. And I thought if Porzingis could stay healthy, that was going to happen when they traded Porzingis, when the Knicks traded him to the Mavericks. Let's start with Porzingis. Do you understand? Like, everyone knows how special Luka is. Almost averaging a 30-point triple-double as a second-year NBA player, right? In every level he's played at since he's a kid, he dominates that league with older, more experienced players, including the NBA, as it turns out. He's amazing, and everyone knows it. Porzingis is the one who gets slept on. People are forgetting what Porzingis was before the injury. He was really the number one part of his game was defense. He would step on the court and the entire other team's offense changed. It's not just that he averages two blocks a game, because by the way, he's already back to being about a 20 point, 10 rebound, two block guy. 20, 10, and 2 for a center in the modern NBA is great. But and he's doing it pretty efficiently too. He could shoot the three, the whole thing. But it was never really his offense. The offense had to catch up. It was already excellent, but it had to catch up to the defense. And then when you have the injury he had, you need a year to come back and then a year to get back to where you were. And it looked like that wouldn't be this season except for the hiatus because of the pandemic. Maybe it gave him even more time to rest because he has been a monster since he came back. They've lost a couple of close games to hot teams, an overtime loss, a one possession loss, a two possession loss. And Porzingis is dropping, and then they got to win. Porzingis is dropping 39 and 16. He has another 30-point game. What we didn't drop last night, 22 and 9. But he's doing it, you know, he can score in the paint. He can shoot the three. He can take another big off the dribble. He can defend in space for a guy who's 7'3". He can defend the paint. Like, Porzingis is a beast, and I believe if he stays healthy, can be an MVP one day in the NBA, because don't forget, it's not just that he has to get back to where he was ascending rapidly. He should go back to that ascension, and I think we're seeing it now. So you have an MVP candidate in Luka and a guy in Porzingis who's getting there on the same team, not even in their primes yet. Yes, already they deserve mention among the best duos in the NBA.
Okay, America, I just want to apologize on behalf of our entire team because Max did not answer the question. The question was, are they a top two in pairs? And the answer is no, they are not. They're a top five. And the difference between being one or two and being top five, especially in this league, is huge. The fact that you contradicted yourself, the fact that you would pick Paul George and Kawhi over LeBron and AD. You just said LeBron is in the MVP and AD should be in the MVP race right now. And Kawhi, and look, no disrespect to the two-time champion, the two-time finals MVP, and Paul George, who's a bad, bad boy. Like, all of those guys are impressive. But ultimately, it goes LeBron and AD. Then I would go Russell and James. Then I would go Paul George and Kawhi. Now, I know people are going to say, well, those guys don't have a championship, but we're just talking about pairs. We're not talking about teams. We're not talking about accolades. We're just purely talking about pairs. Right now, Luka and Porzingis are in the top five. And eventually, to your point, will they win a championship if they stay together and stay healthy? I believe without a doubt, because they have two unique players that dominate both sides of the ball. You have a great defensive player in Porzingis. You have a ridiculous offensive player in Luka, and they complement each other extremely well, and they're in a great organization. But ultimately, are they in the top two? No. Truth be told, they're not even really that close to being in the top two, but they are in the top five.
How do you figure? Hold on. First of all, when it mattered most, Kawhi proved he was the best player in the world last season. And Paul George, until he got hurt, was an MVP candidate. That's number one. So, but I would agree that I'll take Kawhi and Paul George, and I'll take LeBron and AD for now. I'm not taking anyone else over Luka and Porzingis. I think Harden and Westbrook are right there. I wouldn't put them above. And who else are we talking about, really? Like, Porzingis is 2 inches taller than Kareem Abdul-Jabbar and shoots the three. And as I said, can take another big off the dribble. And offense isn't even the name of his game.
But we're talking about now. We're talking
about right now.
We're talking
that
right now. Yeah, but what I'm saying, though, is right now, not 5 years in the future, because you're right. If you're talking about 4 years in the future, those guys are the answer. If you're talking about 3 years in the future, those guys are most likely the answer. But right now, they are not. They are in the seventh seed. They are one of the worst clutch teams in the NBA. They have the best offense, but they have one of the worst efficiencies when it comes to the last 5 minutes of a game where it's a five-point game. That is not dominance. That is not dominance. You can't tell me that the seventh seed, especially when they have talent around them, all of a sudden, they have won what?
They have one fewer win than the Rockets.
They have won what?
They have one fewer win than the Rockets. And unlike the Rockets, what's that?
No. My point that I was trying to make is in the future, they are the answer. In 3 years, they are the answer. Today, right now, they are not in the top two. And that's the we can talk. Okay, You said you had all of these individuals. You named the top two and then said that they're going to be one in the future. Yes.
Is Luka an MVP candidate?
Yes.
Okay, so you have one MVP caliber player, and I submit to you that Porzingis is clearly playing at a high all-star level, but you have to take into account the trajectory of his career. He was already a high all-star when he got hurt. A year to recover, a year to get back to where he was, but where he was is not a plateau. Where he was is an ascending player. And I am telling you that the time off gives him more time to heal. You see him in the bubble picking up where he left off when he was at his best with the Knicks and getting better than that. And that is starting to enter MVP territory if he keeps it up. So you have one MVP caliber player and one high-level all-star who's ascending.
At best, they are four. Right? You're not going to pick Luka over LeBron James in the future, not now. You're not going to pick Porzingis over Anthony Davis in the future, not right. So exactly. So right there. So the question was, are they in the top two? No. And me personally, I would still take James Harden and Russell Westbrook. Two guys that have already proven that they can win MVPs. I would already take that. I would take Harden and Westbrook.
I said, does Luka deserve MVP consideration? Is he in the conversation? You said yes. I'm sure you will say he's not top two. You don't have to be top two to be in the conversation. I think top five is very much in the conversation. No. But you could argue that they're top three. You could easily argue they're top three. You want to take Harden and Westbrook? I think it's close.
The question was, are they in the top two? And at the end of the day, ended this segment with a no, no. The question was, are they in the top two?
No, it's not. That's not the question. They're saying two. In other words, the pair of players are they in the top two consideration? Meaning of all teams who have the top two, who has the best tandem? And they are in that conversation as best tandem. If you're saying, are they top two in that conversation, I would say no. There are two tandems I think above them. But they're right there with anyone else.
Okay. Agreed.
There you go.
All right. We'll leave it on that note, guys.
It was all a misunderstanding.
According to Richard Jefferson, top five duos are Porzingis and Luka.